From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made over the holidays when a woman in Tulsa, Oklahoma, posted a message on Craigslist. The woman, named Carrie, asked if anyone needed a grandma for Christmas. She offered to bring food and gifts for kids. She wrote, quote, "I have nobody, and it really hurts," end quote. The New York Times shared this story today, noting that 3 in 5 working Americans report feeling lonely with regularity. And now, with the country dealing with the coronavirus pandemic and experts recommending social distancing as really the only and best way to contain the virus further, it's likely that many more Americans, especially the elderly or the immunocompromised, will be home or quarantined. Pew Research Center reports that 27% of older Americans live alone, and according to the Health Resources and Services Administration, older people who feel lonely have a 45% increased chance of mortality. It notes loneliness can cause depression, high blood pressure, and death from heart disease. With the current pandemic, the epidemic of loneliness could get worse. We've been stating on this program for the past several days that preparation is not panic, and we reiterate that this hour. We're talking about how to plan ahead and provide emotional support and social support to people who may be quarantined and distanced from other people. Our guests will share their recommendations. Their help this hour is for all of us. We're going to focus on specific populations, but this is going to be a challenge for everybody. You may already be feeling like, boy, this is going to be close quarters with a child or with a spouse. You might feel like you don't have options socially. You might feel like things get repetitive or kind of quiet and lonely quickly. And then especially think about people in those more vulnerable populations. Well, this conversation for all of us, and let me welcome our guests in studio. Dr. Eric Kane is former chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Kane, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here today.
Also with us is Anne Marie Cook, president and CEO of Lifespan of Greater Rochester. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Hello to Sarah Hopkins in studio with us, a licensed clinical social worker and director at Rochester Regional Health. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
And on the line with us is Dr. Yates Conwell, professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Conwell, how are you?
I'm well, Evan. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me go around and ask all of you right now, when we think about social distancing, a term that has entered the lexicon in just days, and that now most of us know generally what that means, but days ago probably had never heard about that, what worries you the most, Dr. Kane, with this?
Well, I have a series of thoughts as this is all unfolded, and in fact, colleagues and I have been talking about it for a few weeks now, and certainly one of the first things that came up were elders who would be alone and isolated. And actually was talking with Dr. Conwell and colleagues at the U of R about how this might have an impact on their lives. Some of us have looked at these kinds of situations before, particularly the SARS epidemic in Hong Kong, and several of us were involved with evaluating that and looking at its consequences. And it really ramifies across all ages, as you already said. Certainly older people were affected by that, but also younger people, and we can come back to that. But, you know, the big thing for me is how are we going to look ahead and organize and do what we can do to help connect and protect people's lives, and what can different organizations do and what can our community do?
Anne Marie Cook, when you think about the social distancing and the isolation at Lifespan, what comes to mind first for you?
Yeah, like other organizations, we've been gathering every morning during this evolving kind of situation. And one of the big things we're talking about is how do we stay in touch with clients? What if we can't have large groups of people, which we can't, older adults gather together for health reasons? How do we make sure that they're okay? They receive the services that they need. And, you know, we have a plan out there to call our most vulnerable clients, but it will reach beyond the vulnerable clients because those individuals who go to senior centers every day, who go out, will not be able to do that. And so we are trying to recruit more volunteers to help us with daily phone calls. We're trying to help, we're trying to get staff redeployed so that we can make sure older adults in our community at least have a connection a day to make sure they're okay.
Daily phone calls entail what?
Literally picking up the phone and calling our most vulnerable clients that Lifespan has. That's how we're going to start and say, do you have enough food? Do you have enough supplies that you need? Is everything okay? and chit-chat with folks. I mean, we are worried about that social isolation, as well as, of course, their health during this pandemic.
So if people are going to be staying home themselves, could they volunteer for you from home?
They sure can.
Wouldn't that be an interesting way to feel connected
to
people?
That's right.
Hey, we can all be lonely, and this is a chance to volunteer and make a phone call and just check in with people and chat. How you doing? What's on your mind? What's going on? Interesting. How do they volunteer?
Well, they call Lifespan, 244-8400. We already have a group of volunteers who call lonely people, or people who live alone, rather, anyway. So this isn't a new service that Lifespan does, but obviously we have to dramatically expand it.
There's a lot happening, Sarah Hopkins, pretty quickly as people sort of adjust to the changes. There's just this morning a brand new public Facebook group, Monroe County, New York based, called You're Not Alone, Corona Chat. Just a chance for people to jump on Facebook and find a page to talk about loneliness at all ages. What comes to mind first for you as we think about mental health during these times?
So actually, I was thinking how much I appreciate what Anne-Marie is saying, because in addition to wanting to take care of ourselves and take control and be well-informed, making a contribution to other people is a very smart way to stay connected. At Rochester Regional Health, very similar, there is a lot of planning going on, and how do we continue to stay in touch with people who are in treatment with us? How do we reach out to them? You know, do we need to move towards more phone calls, more telehealth? And that is all actively being planned and discussed, because we want to stay available and connected to each other. Facebook groups and social media opportunities are more available now than ever before, and maybe that is a way to stay connected. We do need to stay in touch with each other and support each other.
Dr. Conwell, what comes to mind first for you during these times?
Well, you know, Evan, this is a great conversation already, focusing on the crisis that we face and hear about so much during the course of the day is necessary and important. I guess also what you included in your lead-in about the effects of loneliness and social isolation for older adults on a whole range of other health outcomes is important to keep in mind for the long term. You talked about cardiovascular disease. It's true with regard to diabetes, as well as cognitive health, dementia, depression, suicide risk, and early mortality of all causes that social isolation and loneliness really have an impact on increasing all of those things. So there's the long-term benefits of the kind of things that people are talking about here, and then there's the very important short-term benefits, helping older people leverage the strengths and the opportunities that they have in order to mitigate those longer-term potential risks.
Listeners, if you want to join the conversation, as we talk about isolation, we talk about understanding social distancing, loneliness, concerns, depression, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Dr. Kane, when we move into a period of rapid change, the hard part for most of us is we've never done this before. This is new. So isolation for those who may be older Americans, they may be living in nursing homes, they may be dealing with isolation already, but for a lot of us, this is going to be a rapid change if it hasn't already been. Getting used to mostly staying at home or on your street, mostly not going out doing social things, different menu of options, many reduced options. How fast, whether you're in the elderly population or not, how fast can sort of a mental health change and maybe a downturn for your mental health, can that happen?
Well, yeah, and I think you're getting at something which obviously is implicit in all that we're saying. Clearly, there are especially vulnerable people such as elders, but there are others, and I just tick off a couple. You know, having led a department of psychiatry for 24 years, I always think back to that, and of course, you know, we run large programs, as does Rochester Regional Health, for people with severe mental disorders, who come not every day of the week, but often several days of the week to large group settings where you get a lot of social support, you get a lot of input. Think of all the substance use treatment programs. Think of something like AA. Think of all these group-oriented kinds of things where we're now saying, hey, you know, you've got to stay away or stay apart. Mm-hmm. in Hong Kong, you know, we saw that actually when the suicide rate went up during the SARS epidemic, while it was elders who experienced it, most of it actually came from working age people, 20 to 59 years old. And many were still employed, but they were under tremendous economic stress and social stress. So this is going to reach out across all of us. And I think the closest thing that some of us can think about is, how did we feel after 9/11? You know, if we had to pick something where there was a stunning one-day change in our outlook on the world, if someone wants to think about something, it was how just totally world-changing, life-changing, image-changing, sensibility-changing 9/11 was. And so I think, and it was really hard for a lot of people to adjust to that. There were not only, you know, PTSD in New York City, there was just trauma psychologically around the country. And so I think that, you know, we are need to be prepared to support each other in ways to think creatively. How do we deliver care to people, say, with serious mental disorders? How do we, you know, find people who are depressed or people who are, you know, already going to be isolated for all sorts of reasons and reach out? And this is a real challenge for our society because we're particularly individually oriented. As we were talking about before we came in here, you know, who in Rochester is organizing social connections? You know, the social connection treatment program for the city of Rochester, you know, how do we bring together churches and the Y's and the, you know, the JCC and the communities and the diverse groups that all are congregating groups, but now we're not going to be able to congregate in the same way. And there needs to be this kind of collective action. And we're not used to collective action in the United States. Mm-hmm. This is really something that's, you know, I'm an individual. I can stand on my own 2 feet. I can make it in the world. Well, that's not the way to go right now.
That's a powerful statement. Mm-hmm. And before we continue here, let me grab a phone call from Dave in Rochester who wants to share a story. Go ahead, Dave.
So my daughter lived in Italy for the last 18 years. She's a tour guide, and she lives alone. And based on the fact that her days were always busy, her home became her sanctuary. And now with this quarantine that Italy has imposed, and it's a serious quarantine. People are getting fined heavily if they're found walking on the street without a reason. Now her sanctuary became her little prison, and so she's been trying to deal with that the best way she can. She's a very gregarious human being, and so she's constantly calling me, and it's really shows you how lonely she is when she's calling her father 3 times a day. The fact that, you know, what they're doing there, just to give you an idea, they have some kind of Facebook or something that they use in Italy that people are talking to each other. And in Naples, for instance, which their buildings are quite close together, they are opening their windows and standing on the balcony and sharing music. So the
yes.
And that's one of the things. And now in Rome, where she lives, they're trying to accomplish the same thing. Unfortunately, a lot of the buildings around her are bed and breakfast, which are no longer being occupied because there's no tourists. So she's just kind of doing it on her own, you know, sort of putting the music on and singing and dancing. Mm-hmm. I just hope she doesn't go completely crazy, but being by herself. But that's her issue right now. She can't get on the street. They go to the supermarket. They're allowed to do that. So as long as she's in the supermarket, she talks to, you know, even the tomatoes on the shelf. She don't care.
So Dave, hang there for a second, but look what a lot of people are sharing. This is out of Siena, Italy, in Tuscany.
So I can't see this,
So what you're hearing here is an empty street, but the windows are open, and people are being asked to join in and sing, and they are.
Yeah, that's the new thing now.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
That's their connecting.
They
used to hugging and kissing, and now they're just singing.
Yeah, no. I'm in Italy. I mean, mark change. But before I let you go, Dave, you say that, you know, I know you sort of tongue-in-cheek say you hope she doesn't go completely crazy. How would you say she's doing right now?
She's hanging on. What's going to happen, she has not a citizenship, but a residency for Italy, or so she's a dual citizen or something, but she still has an American passport. So she was going to try to come home, and we talked about it, and we don't know how long this thing is going to last. They're talking it's 30 days, and by the time she came home and went into quarantine and all that other stuff, she decided against it. So for the first 3 days, she was absolutely miserable, absolutely miserable. And then a stray dog happened to come upon her as she was coming home and followed her home because, I don't know, she had the pastrami or something in the bag. And so he followed her, and he kind of kept her company. It was sort of a, like, you know, almost like God sent her a little gift for a couple of days, you know, and then he took off when the pastrami ran out. But the fact that she now is somewhat becoming adjusted to it. I think the human psyche can basically do that if it has to. It's a defense mechanism that we have.
I mean, interesting.
If a person's put in solitary confinement, you know, they just start thinking of things, who knows what, but it keeps them occupied enough not to lose the mind completely. And that's where she is. And of course, she you know, in this case, she's able to call, so she calls me, calls her mother, calls her brother, and she never calls her brother, like, ever. But the fact that he's in Ecuador, so she was able to, you know, get different stories out of him. But the fact that she's by herself and never has been her whole life, it's quite an adjustment. But, you know, I think people just find a way. I just think they do.
Hey,
but,
you can send her the podcast link to this and tell her much love all the way to Italy, and that we're thinking about her, and that there is a sense that we are all in this together. And much love to you too, Dave. Thank you very much for the phone call.
Okay, thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
What a remarkable story. So let me ask, and I'll go back around the panel. A couple things stand out. Obviously, the creative ways to continue social contact, important, and we all know that. But Dr. Conwell, Dave is positing this idea that with time, at least his daughter is getting more accustomed and it's not as hard. Do you expect that will be true for most people?
For most people, yeah. I mean, that so much of what Dave was saying is really a great lesson that can be generalized. The pets, people have very strong connections to their pets when they have them, and of course, they're going to stay home. The idea of congregating, even when you can't be in the same room, social media offers a way to do that. And then generally, people are strong, and this is true of older people too. We fall back on some of the things if we're careful, concentrating on the things that are meaningful to us, trying to find ways, which many older people have and have learned over many years of experience, to exert control over things, to be mindful about their environment, to focus on the here and now and what's important rather than what's going on around them or what they might fear in the future. That's actually part of normal aging, that older people in general know how to do that. They're pros at it. So while we need to be very careful about people who are vulnerable by virtue of underlying depression or a predisposition to under stress, developing more symptoms, or if they have a prior history of alcohol misuse or something like that, I think we can be comfortable that in general, people in all age groups and older adulthood have a lot of strengths to call on under situations like this.
Sarah, do you think we can expect for all of us to slowly get more accustomed to this?
I think that makes a lot of sense. We are resilient. We do learn. We do adapt. Part of what is so hard right now is the level of uncertainty that we're experiencing, and information is coming at us so quickly, and things change, expectations change, the guidelines, the rules. It's all changing so fast. We're adapting as quickly as we can. Often we are creatures of routine, and we don't love it when that happens. But we certainly do tolerate it, and we do get used to, as sometimes called, the new normal. But I really appreciated the analogy to 9/11, because I find myself thinking of that time also, just in my own life, and reflecting on how a common purpose, which is what it feels like we have right now, can be so meaningful. Like, we can pull together and recognize that we all have a role to play and things that we need to do, from the simple hand washing and staying home when we're sick, or to volunteering to make calls, or whatever it is. We all have this thing that we can coalesce around right now and participate in and join as a community. And that, I take heart in that, and I think that's going to be meaningful for a lot of people.
I want to get Dr. Kane and Anne-Marie Cook, and in particular, when I turn to Anne-Marie, there's something that Dave's call evoked in the New York Times piece from this morning. Before I get there, Dr. Kane, what stands out to you in Dave's call about his daughter?
Well, you know, one of the things that I was struck by is he's an anchor. He's actually a good example of the kind of anchor that we all need. And so her distress obviously is one that's hard to put my mind into, you know, being in a place where I have no connections or very few, it sounds like. On the other hand, you know, there's a steadfast quality about his presence, even though he's far away and the family. And also that his daughter was being adaptive and even calling her brother. You know, imagine, you know, and as he put it. So, you know, there were some really healthy things there, despite her distress. Unfortunately, his analogy to solitary confinement doesn't always hold up well. It's a terrible place for people to be. And we know that that can be very stressful for some people. But again, it goes to their vulnerabilities. And as Dr. Conwell underscored, most people are resilient. Most people have the strengths. Most people will see the beginning and the middle of end and imagine an end, even if we can't put a date on it. And this is going to be really critical where leadership is important. You know, after 9/11, we had a lot of leadership at different levels, and I think we're going to need that. And we may not get it at all the places we want. I mean, you know, we've had some very idiosyncratic leadership from the top. But on the other hand, there are lots of things that local leaders can do if they pull together.
Well said. Anne-Marie Cook from Lifespan. I'm hearing Dave's call, and he's thinking about his daughter, who's obviously younger than the population that you serve. But she needed to feel still connected, to sort of feel kind of motivated to get into a new kind of rhythm. Here's what the New York Times wrote this morning about loneliness and protecting fellow citizens. Let me quote from this. Quote, there is evidence that the more isolated people feel, the less likely they are to take measures to protect themselves and their fellow citizens. A study conducted in Germany found that among a cohort of people aged 60 and up, increased loneliness was associated with lower rates of flu vaccination. In Taiwan, a feeling of loneliness, a feeling of closeness with neighbors, was associated with intention to get vaccinated or to wash hands more frequently. End quote. In other words, the more people feel that they are connected to the world in some way, the more they're going to be mindful to care for themselves, to care for others. And, you know, I think about hearing about couples who are married 50 years and one member of the couple passes away and then the other passes away within a year. And I mean, that's super anecdotal, but you hear these stories all the time. It's like this idea of a motivational idea to keep moving, to keep caring for yourself. Do you agree with that sort of framing that when you feel connected, you're more likely to help yourself and help others? And are you more sort of heightened to what we're about to face with this, given the isolation people may feel?
Absolutely, Evan. And you know what we see at Lifespan all the time? We're always looking at this social isolation, what it does to individuals, and really trying to combat it all the time, whether that's encouraging folks to go to senior centers or YMCAs or one of our health and wellness classes. I'll just say we, all over the community, we do health and wellness classes, whether it's Matter of Balance or chronic disease self-care management. There's a whole host of them, Tai Chi. But, you know, it's interesting. I look at the surveys all the time, and the biggest benefit to those health classes is that I met friends and we have continued on after the 8-week or 12-week program, that they have found people who have similar conditions, health conditions that they do, and that the social connections meant more to them even than learning how to care for their chronic conditions. And that has stuck with me for a long time, in which older adults can become lonely over time. You mentioned, like, even as couples have been married for a long period of time, one of them goes, the biggest thing they always tell us is fighting that loneliness. And so I think it is something we have to think about during this time of social distancing, during this time when so many things have been canceled, from, mm-hmm. you know, cultural activities to conferences to group activities. We have to make sure that it's at the forefront to make sure people feel connected to others.
And briefly related, Dr. Kane, not necessarily on isolation and loneliness, which is the crux of this hour, but there are also going to be people who are fighting panic. We don't want that. We've been counseling everyone. Preparation is not panic. But for especially in the older population, for people who are dealing with panic, that's a different category. What's the message?
Well, I think, you know, we have to be very aware that there are going to be a lot of people who are going to worry because they don't feel they have the control anymore. And this is where hands out, taking care of each other, and understanding that you're not necessarily going to be that isolated, but there's that worry. You know, it sounds very draconian now. It sounds like, you know, the hammer's falling, and I think a lot of people are going to find their way around to being connected. We also have to know that there are going to be a lot of older people who are worried about their finances. You know, not everybody has a defined benefit anymore. You know, they're on Social Security, but maybe they had some money in a 401k or something of that sort, and the stock market is really tanked. Now, a lot of people don't have those, but some do, and they see their retirement, and they're really worried about that. And the whole issue of, well, is this going to go on forever? Am I losing my ability to live independently? Do I have to go back and be a burden on my children? You know, these are other kinds of things. And again, this is going to depend on how people, you know, help the financial markets. And that sounds rather grand and far away, but I know a lot of elders who've always worried about those things, even when they're doing okay. You know, this is just central to their fret center. That's a special part in the brain where you fret too much and you worry too much, you know. And so, again, we want to reassure people that this, you know, this too shall pass. It's just going to take some time.
Okay. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we'll take more of your feedback. So if you're on the phone, we'll take your calls. We'll take your emails, 844-295-TALK. We're here, and we're going to be here. And some days we're going to talk coronavirus, and some days we're going to talk stuff that's just brain junk food that's just going to make us sort of take our minds off things. We're going to have some fun because the world still needs that. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Connections at WXXI.org for the email. Dr. Eric Kane, you just heard, the former chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Anne Marie Cook, the president and CEO of Lifespan of Greater Rochester. Sarah Hopkins is a licensed clinical social worker and director at Rochester Regional Health. Dr. Yates Conwell, professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Your feedback after our only break. I'm Evan Dawson, Monday on The Next Connections. In our continuing series of conversations about the impact of the coronavirus, we're talking about small business owners in Western New York. Some are very concerned. There are a lot of estimates about closures or a lot of economic pain. What can we do for them now? What do they expect government to do? What's the path forward? Talk with you Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tedna in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead.
Hi, dear. I'm Tedna, a really retired physician. I had two things to share with you guys. I lived in prison conditions, allowed to go to school, not allowed to have friends or write letters or visit people. I could go to school and come back as a teenager. And I was never, people would say, you must be so lonely. I had a crazy pedophile mother. I wasn't lonely because I had Turgenev and Tolstoy and Gogol and Dumas, and these were all my friends. And they were living people for me. And now I'm writing movie scripts. But the fact of the matter remains that I feel many people are cut off from the arts and don't realize that a poem, a Wild West wind, the breath of autumn's being, reading a poem out loud, if you wish to, calling a friend and reading the poem to them. But these authors are living people for me. I'm in my 70s now. I'm never lonely. I have hundreds of friends who've written essays, who have written books, who have written plays. I was recently rereading some major American plays. Little Foxes was a disappointment. But my deal is, the man who came for dinner made me laugh out loud many times. But we don't need to be isolated as long as we have the arts.
Tedna, thank you.
And people need to have the courage to reach out and grab their heritage. The second thing I had to say is much more important. Boccaccio. One of my languages is Italian. I recently learned, I knew that the Canterbury Tales by Chaucer was one of the earliest pieces of non-religious related storytelling, but he got the idea from the Decameron. And Boccaccio set his stories, which were groundbreaking in the 1500s, in a place where rich people had gone to hang out and survive during a quarantine due to the plague. And it resulted in the creativity of the Decameron. It was the first time that somebody told stories outside of a religious setting in medieval times, early Renaissance. And I would submit that many of the people isolated right now should be considering lyrics for a song, writing a poem, sculpting, learning a new recipe. I'm learning to knit, learning to do things that are beyond your previous comfort zone that later you can share face-to-face with people, but right now you can share via Skype.
I like that, Ted. And let me jump in and say, if we're all going to have more time, you might as well learn some things. You say to yourself, why did I quit that instrument? I don't know. I know people might not have a piano at home, but pick something. Or you want to learn yoga or something. However, I am curious to know, Dr. Conwell, are people more motivated to do that when they could do it with somebody? Or do you think it's realistic? Because tetanus seems to be sort of a self-starter.
I think people come in all flavors here. And certainly there are going to be folks who don't have that discipline, the experience in kind of thinking in those terms and working in those settings alone, and are much more comfortable with others. In which case, finding these other means by which to communicate and contribute is important. But there's so much. I mean, I love the comment, and it really brings me to thinking about mindfulness and whatever works for you as an individual to help you focus on something over which you feel some control. There's so much. This was referenced before. So much about this, I think, is about finding a place where you can control what's going on around you and within you.
Let me get Anna's comment. This is an interesting email. I'm a social work student who's passionate about advancing the rights and well-being of older adults in our community. As a millennial, however, I'm so discouraged at the way my generation is acting about the outbreak of this pandemic, making selfish remarks such as, well, I won't suffer even if I do get sick because I'm young and healthy, so I'm going to take advantage of that $200 plane ticket, or expressing angry sentiments at the cancellations of events. How can I impact my generation to think more holistically about this crisis and consider how older adults and other populations of people who are immunocompromised could be dangerously impacted by the coronavirus? Anne-Marie, that's a fascinating email. I mean, so Anna's email brings to mind for me a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, Blake Snell, for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, who before baseball was canceled a few days ago said, I don't get what the big deal is. If I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. Play the games. Well, same sentiment.
It was interesting when you said that, because when you were reading that email, I was thinking about those basketball players, the baseball players who said the same thing. And I think in people's social services circles, once they begin to see that it will impact all of us in some way, shape, or form, maybe not to the extent of some vulnerable older adults who have health issues, but they will begin to see the light. And I know that one basketball player has apologized.
He has. Rudy Gobert has been very effusive in his apologies for not taking this seriously. But I think to Anna's point, though, it ought not hit us personally for us to actually care. She seems to be making a generational comment. Do you agree with that?
Well, we fight, in addition to social isolation and loneliness, we always are fighting ageism. And so, you know, I took that as sort of an ageist comment in which, you know, people once again, in some respects, don't care about older adults. And that's how I take that whole comment. We always have to fight ageism. And certainly all the people here, I'm sure most of the listeners, care about people birth to death, regardless of age.
So Evan, I want to pick up on this and come back to this comment I made earlier about leadership. And this is really a critical time where we need to see people of values share their values and come together in a way that pulls communities in a certain direction. I mean, leadership whether in the city or the county or the state or the nation is really critical in helping to build a common vision. And it isn't really all that unusual to see different people based on religion, race, age, gender, whatever, have different perceptions at the outset of a problem. We don't all experience it in the same way. But over time, we come to sort of pull the wagon together if there are the kinds of discussions that need to be done. For instance, you know, how is Rochester, Monroe, this upstate region, to come together to enhance connectedness? You know, who with Lifespan and the health systems and Wegmans and the city and the county are going to sit down and say, well, sure, we've got to be worried about people washing their hands, but we also have to be worried about people being connected, not being alone, feeling like there's somebody who cares about them. Are there ways of having that kind of social discussion? I think there are, but I think that takes leaders and it takes...
Have you seen the leadership that you want to see so far on
not
this?
Yet, no. I mean, people are obviously at this point very concerned about how do I keep people safe from a virus? But the next level of question is how do I keep people healthy and well beyond simply infection? And this can be viewed at the congressional level in terms of financial stimulus, you know, paid sick leave and those sorts of things. But it also can be viewed at the social and local connection. And, you know, and people have to step forward. We have some designated leaders and they need to step forward and really talk about this now.
So I will just piggyback off the point there. And Anna, thank you for that outstanding email. I was frustrated earlier in the week on social media hearing some people say, you know, well, this is so overblown, or can we just wait and see? And these are younger people. And the point is, it's not about you. That doesn't mean, by the way, that if you get the virus that you won't be sick or that it won't be dangerous to you. It could be. And people
or that it won't affect your job
or, your
friend's job, or whatever.
Or be annoying or cumbersome to you and your family. But I mean, assuming high survival rates, you know, it might not be about you. This is not about you. And that's okay. It's okay to say it's not necessarily about you. It's about a collective action to help people in need and the people who are most vulnerable. And there's a real risk right now. And just because you don't see it immediately doesn't mean it's not coming. One of the great advantages we should have is the fact that we got to see what happened in Wuhan, in Italy, in Korea. Seattle is the first heavily hit city in this country. We should be learning every day, logistically planning, but also how to manage and mitigate life. We've got a chance here because we've got a chance to see the roadmap in front of us, but it's not necessarily about you. And Anna's point is on the money, and I'm really grateful for that. David in Rochester is next on the phone. Go ahead, David.
Yes, I'd like to make a couple points. I'm not hearing terribly many concrete suggestions. One that I would offer, and it's something that many Rochester neighborhoods have already, is the website nextdoor.com. You can post anything on that with a target to your specific neighborhood. We don't do enough of that. And my second point is that we're going to learn an awfully lot about how well we know our neighbors. Americans have, they live in neighborhoods, but are we, how neighborly are we? And it strikes me that simple things like taking a walk with your dog, dog walkers and letter carriers are in a position to know just about every household if they maintain the same route all the time. And they can be sort of the eyes and ears with a little assist from neighborhood leaders to report anything that seems to be an indication of isolation. And some of them are very cooperative, others are not so. But it's so important to tap local resources, and I would suggest sure. that people really think about the quality of their neighborhood and how that steps that can be taken to bring neighbors together. And some neighborhoods are doing a great job of this. Thanks.
So, David, thank you. Thanks for the phone call. So let me ask all four of our guests about that, because what David is saying is let's be specific. What can we specifically do to reach out, to create connection? We mentioned this morning there's a brand new Facebook group called You're Not Alone, Monroe County, New York, Corona Chat. Small, growing, but there's one idea. Dr. Conwell, specifically to David's point, what can we do starting now?
Well, we do have the advantage over Italy, and referencing the previous caller, David, of being able to get out of our homes, even though we're not necessarily going to be congregating in large groups. But the idea of walking, being in nature, doing things that help you be in the here and now. So there is stuff that we can do currently to exert control over our lives.
Okay.
Might add one more.
Sure,
actually,
sure.
If
yeah,
I could,
sure.
Before you go. You know, we're all drawn to the media on this. And, you know, if you've got, for example, the stock ticker up on your phone, take it off. We don't want to necessarily be looking ahead all the time and being awash in bad news. Think about today and the things that you can control.
Sarah Hopkins, what do you think?
So I find myself thinking about the importance of staying grounded in factual, real information. So social media does give us an opportunity to connect with each other. It also gives us an opportunity to react with maybe alarm or concern that can spread. So I find myself really just trying to reach out to really trusted sources of information and not getting overwhelmed with having the news on all the time, similar to the comments about the stock ticker. If we sit and watch it over and over and over again, we can really get ourselves into like a what-if scenario and what if this, what if that, and become very overwhelmed very quickly. And when that happens, our ability to make good decisions for ourselves gets increasingly impaired. So I think striking a balance between how do you stay informed and plan ahead, but not overwhelm yourself with information that can be so alarming and scary.
Anne Marie, you mentioned specific volunteering opportunities with Lifespan, a way to not only help people who are older, but also maybe form connections yourself. What other specific ideas?
Well, I do still want to go back to make one phone call. If you want one thing to do, make one phone call to an older neighbor or an isolated neighbor for whatever reason.
Or checking on
or family. Yeah, family, of course. Mm-hmm. And make one phone call and be kind to somebody. Just check in. And I'm going to say it'll make your day as well as their day. And that will be a huge thing for them and your neighborhood.
Dr. Kane.
Well, several things and sort of in, well, I've already talked about leadership pulling things together. And that, and there are, as I say, designated leaders already who can do that. But we also have many congregating organizations, whether we call them churches or the YMCA or, you know, they have lists of people who are members. And they can obviously take it as a task and take what Anne-Marie has said, but use it and amplify it. And not only use their listservs and their emails, but also reach out, you know, sometimes organize volunteer groups. The other thing, which of course is I think very important, is that the health systems really understand that they have the ability now with electronic medical records and dashboards of pulling up people that they think may be more vulnerable based on chronic illness, based on some understanding of their living situation, and trying to have care managers and others reach out or work with organizations mindful of HIPAA and all the other kinds of confidentiality things, work in ways to try to reach out to the people that they might think are vulnerable. I mentioned, of course, early on the people with severe mental disorders and other kinds of things who won't necessarily be able to come to their treatment programs and who won't be able to come, whether it's for that or for substance use. And we have to think a lot about how do we really interact with these very ultra vulnerable populations in a way that is thoughtful and planned.
All right, back to the phones. Dr. Conwell, is that you? Go ahead.
Yeah, it is, actually. Evan, I'd like to add one more thing. We've talked a lot about resilience and how people can help manage the stress of this, but there will be people who are vulnerable to reemergence of more serious mental health problems under stress. And I just wouldn't want to miss reminding folks that there are crisis lines available, such as the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or 1-800-273-TALK. There are people you can pick up the phone and talk to who have expertise in crisis situations.
All right, Anne from Penfield. Go ahead, Anne.
Hi, Evan. This is a great show, and I think you've sparked some great ideas for future programs as well.
Thanks.
Anne-Marie Cook mentioned about the program they have for contacting clients that are vulnerable or fragile. And I was thinking, it occurred to me that statistically, we know that 20 to 25% of elders, of people in low-income communities and in the disability community probably do not have computers or smartphones or the money to afford that either. It occurred to me maybe one thing people could also do when they're making phone calls is to ask if the person they're talking to or the client has a radio. You guys are fabulous, and I can't imagine life without WXXI. And so having a working radio seems to be important. Another idea that occurred to me is that in addition to making sure that people have enough food and that food insecurity is not a problem, I think it would be important to make sure there's enough pet food. And maybe ideally there's some way to have vouchers, because I know with my cat, just any, you know, any generic bag of pet food, it may not necessarily be the one she's going to be eating, but that may be another issue to be thinking about. And it occurred to me for future programs, possibly having roundtables with the disability community, disability rights folks, and even veterinarians, because I think there are going to be a lot of pressures and maybe unexpected events that are occurring. And you know, in the disability community, nothing about us without us. I love that slogan. Mm-hmm. So that was what occurred to me. And final little thought, if folks are thinking of trying to keep their families busy, it occurred to me nothing is sweeter than drawings by children. And it may be through schools or church groups or Lifespan, if folks who are not able to get out very much can be the recipient of like a pen pal kind of thing. Here's a picture of the sunset, or here's a picture of a tree. I think that could be very endearing. Something like that blew across the lawn a few days ago. I was thinking, oh, boy, here's a gift from the universe.
Well,
so at any rate, those are some ideas, and keep up this wonderful series of programs you've got, Evan. It's just terrific.
And thank you. We're going to be here no matter what, and I appreciate that phone call. And we've got maybe about a minute left for all of our guests, so let me just kind of go around the table again with all four of our guests, and I'm just going to ask you and you just a minute, what you want to leave with the audience today as we all think about mental health, as we all think about caring for each other and ourselves, what's the message, Dr. Kane?
Well, you know, as I've looked around the world and thought about suicide prevention, I've seen the countries that are successful, and there are some that are dramatically successful, have a characteristic of what I call collective alignment. They're all pulling the sled, the whatever you want to call it, together from the top, from the bottom. They really understand a set of shared values. And this is one of those instances where we will thrive if we do it, and we'll actually be in pieces if we don't. And we have the opportunity to do that now.
Anne Marie Cook, President and CEO of Lifespan.
Similar to Dr. Kane, I was going to say, if we can just think about caring for each other, whether small ways, I've mentioned calling or stopping in and talking to someone just to, so folks know we're all in this together. I think it gives a great deal of confidence and a great deal of comfort to people knowing that we're pulling together to live through this.
Are you seeing the support so far that you think our seniors are going to need?
I think that we're having a lot of people call worrying about older adults in our community, and I do think that people come out and care for them the way they typically do.
You want to volunteer via phone with Lifespan. What's the number?
244-8400.
Okay. Sarah Hopkins, licensed clinical social worker and director at Rochester Regional Health.
I would add that all the same things, that the way that we work together, the way that we serve each other, are going to be the things that get us through this. And I would just add that I feel heartened that I see that happening. I see a lot of planning and thoughtful communication happening. I see a lot of trying to predict what we need to be doing next and taking care of the people who are vulnerable, figuring out how we can stay connected and present for the people who need us. Like, I see that happening, and that makes me feel very hopeful to Dr. Kane's point that those are the things that seem to be happening.
This is a meet the challenge moment for an entire society. This is it. This is our moment to decide if we're going to rise to this challenge. This is not a moment to panic, but it is a moment to really think about what that means beyond ourselves. I think that's important. Dr. Conwell?
You know, there's one other thought I was having as we were talking about this, and that's that in our culture and in many cultures, to say you're lonely is a very stigmatized thing. We don't admit that to people. And if there's a silver lining here, it's that I think everybody, because being connected to others is a fundamental human need, I don't think there's anybody who would doubt that when we talk about social distancing, it comes with the risk that we're all going to feel lonely. And if people can acknowledge that and understand it, appreciate it, not stigmatize it, but instead reach out and respond in a human way, extend a hand as people are talking about, then we'll come out ahead.
No stigma. This is Boy, this is a time for radical kindness and generosity. That's what this moment calls for. Thoughtfulness, care, patience, a little bit of grit for your parents, gritting it out for your kids, especially if schools start to shift what they're doing. It's going to be a lot of work, a lot of work. We can do it, and we've got to think also about the medical staffs in the hospitals who are going to eventually have a lot more work to do and want to think about them as well. So really hope wherever you are this weekend, just be in touch with us. If you can stay in touch with us through many, many different ways, but you can always email us, connections@wxxi.org. We'd like to hear from our listeners. This is your public radio. What do you expect from us during these interesting and challenging times? What are the conversations you want to hear? As we mentioned, we'll talk a lot about these very specific topics. We'll also move to conversations in very different directions. So we take our minds off of it. We'll try to do all of that. But stay in touch with us, and we'll stay in touch with you. We'll be here. Thanks to all of our guests, Dr. Yates Conwell, professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Thanks, Dr. Conwell.
Thank you.
Dr. Eric Kane, as always, great to have you. Thanks for the insight.
Good to be here.
Thank you very much. And by the way, tough, tough challenge from Dr. Kane to our leadership. And our leadership's at a lot of different levels. Now's the time to lead. Anne-Marie Cook from Lifespan, thank you. Thanks
thank
for the work you.
You're
doing. I appreciate that. And Sarah Hopkins, nice having you here from Rochester Regional Health. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
To the whole team, I want to thank all of the volunteers who've been here for a while. We're going to have to start changing some protocol. But the team is phenomenal. And we're thrilled with the work that they all have done. Bob, David, Don, Josephine, Tim, Dolores, thank you. MRA Stein, intern. Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Much love. Talk with you Monday.